Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast, Better Series, where we will explore top-of-mind topics and self-regulation with business and industry leaders. Together, we seek to understand the leading trends and innovations that continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Better Series Podcast. I'm James Lee. Stop and think for a moment. How many data breach letters have you received from organizations that collect and maintain your personal information? And how many notices has your business had to send to consumers? Chances are you stopped counting how many you received a long time ago. The Identity Theft Resource Center is a nonprofit organization based in San Diego, and they haven't stopped counting. In fact, the ITRC has been counting data breaches for 15 years now. The most recent annual data breach report issued in January shows that more than 11,000 data breaches have been publicly reported since 2015, with 2019 seeing a double-digit increase in breaches over the previous year. Eva Velasquez is the CEO of the ITRC, and she joins us today to talk about what the data shows, but more importantly, what business leaders can do to help prevent data breaches and to help the individuals who are impacted by them. So, Eva, thanks for joining us today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me on, James.
Well, you know, it is the Identity Theft Resource Center, so that kind of begs a question. What's the connection between identity theft and a data breach?
You know, it's funny because those of us in the space can see that it's an obvious connection to us, but I can understand how folks on the outside, not doing this every day, look at particularly data breaches where you see things like, oh, it's a username and password, or, oh, it's my date of birth and my mailing address. I think what gets our attention are certainly data breaches where a social security number, financial account information is compromised, and that kind of makes sense. But when you boil it down, you have to realize that in order for identity crimes to be perpetrated, someone other than you has to have those very important identity credentials. And if you think about your identity like a puzzle, the more pieces someone has of that puzzle, the better they can defeat fraud analytics and the better they can pretend that they're you. So when data is breached, even if it feels like, oh, that's not that big of a deal, that nothing could be further from the truth. Those identity credentials, that information about you, anytime that's compromised and put out there into the interwebs, it just gives those with nefarious motives more information about how to put that identity puzzle that is you together and use it for those nefarious purposes.
Well, that's fascinating because, again, one of those sort of not very obvious issues, but, when you frame it the way you just did, our identity credentials and how we use them have changed over time. So when we first started tracking data breaches 15 years ago, a data breach looked very different than it does today. Is that reflected in the data that the ITRC has been tracking?
Yes, it's absolutely reflected. And just to piggyback on what you were saying, The landscape has absolutely changed because those other quote unquote non-sensitive records are becoming more important. We still categorize them as non-sensitive, but the reality is they all feed into that puzzle. And there are some unobvious things that you might think, why does that even matter? But things like your behavior, your biometrics and your behavioral biometrics, and by that I mean where you shop and how much you spend, and even to the degree, how long do you keep items in your cart before you check out? How many times do you put them in and out and remove them? That's all being tracked. That's all data that we're creating. It's being tracked and held somewhere. So when it's compromised, thieves can then use that to better mimic your own behavior, and that defeats a lot of the fraud analytics that we put in place. So it stands to reason, and we've seen it in the data breach report, non-sensitive records are gaining, they're growing in value, and so of course they're going to be breached. The thieves are going after databases and repositories of data that we wouldn't normally think of as a honeypot. So non-sensitive records have certainly grown, the number of records exposed in each breach, and I think that's the reason why.
Yeah, before we dig into the actual, 2019 data, I think it's also a good reminder that it's also not just electronic records. I mean, there is still good old-fashioned dumpster diving going on, isn't there?
Absolutely. Paper breaches, analog breaches, they still occur. And we are tracking them. They are included in this. And a lot of states in their data breach notification laws, they do include paper breach notification or analog style compromises, but not all states.
Every state now has a data breach notice law. I mean, I know it took a long time to get there, but now everybody has one, correct?
Correct. And it did take a long time. There was one more hanger on, and to be honest, I don't remember which state that was. For a long time, there were about five or six states that still hadn't really come around. And it's interesting because usually when you reach that sort of that critical mass and get to that tipping point, you get 12, 13, 15 states. And all of a sudden, we start having serious conversations about, a federal standard. But that has been a real sticking point in this area, even though for a long time, we've had the majority of states with their own law. That's still been a problem to get us to agree on one universal standard for all states.
Does that mean that some of the consumers who are receiving these notices don't have as strong a protection as consumers in other states?
Well, theoretically, it does. And some of the states that are very proud of being pioneers and have really what they believed to be the strongest notification laws and criteria. I will give them credit for that. However, I don't think that having a universal standard, particularly one that sets a floor and not a ceiling, really is a bad idea. And if there are differences in those levels of protection, this is about notification. It's not about the cybersecurity standards. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when is a company obligated to notify a consumer. And they set different standards, like how many individuals have to be affected before it triggers a breach notification. And some of those are higher and some of them are lower. But I still think that we could come up with a reasonable standard that would facilitate better notification, more transparent notification. And that's the piece we need to be focusing on, is how meaningful is that notification, not just if I hit 100 consumers that are affected versus 1,000, do I have to notify? It's more about what do you have to tell them and how transparent do you have to be? And that's where we need to do some more work.
Well, that leads us into what this latest report shows, because these are all publicly reported breaches. So there may be more, but these are the ones that we publicly know about. What does the data from 2019 tell us?
Well, I'm going to encourage everyone to go ahead and take a look at the report, because we do talk about the big takeaways and what we saw as our aha moments. And I think one of the things that has struck me, not only for 2019, but over the last couple of years, is that overall number of records exposed. Now, interestingly, it was significantly higher as far as sensitive records in 2018, but that was because of an anomaly, a very, very wide scale breach with a lot of sensitive records. But I think those are going to stop being anomalies. I think we're going to continue to see these massive, massive breaches with hundreds of millions of records exposed in one fell swoop. And that's the trend that's very disturbing to me, is that the thieves, while they are committing more acts, and we are seeing 2019 over 2018, we did have an increase in the number of actual incidents that occurred. What's growing at a much more exponential rate is the number of records that are compromised in a single event. And as we continue to build these massive treasure troves of data, and frankly, not protect them to the degree that's necessary, we can see that. That's demonstrably so by the number of breaches that we're having and the number of records that are exposed. The thieves are actually getting better at their jobs. They are understanding where is the data, where can I get the most bang for my buck? And they're able to infiltrate these databases and get and extract this data. So we've really got to change our practices and look at, you know, how can we append this data and segregate it in different ways so that we aren't making a single act so very lucrative for one, you know, group or one thief.
I know, because I've read the report, that one of the trends that you've kind of alluded to there is this concept of not necessarily a data breach, but data exposure, where we don't know if the data has actually left an organization, but we know it was left open for people to see it because it's in a cloud environment, it's connected to the internet, and people can, if they know where it is or know what they're looking for, they can find it, and they may or may not do anything with that information. How big of an issue is that? And how, you know, from a business perspective, is that something that is a hard fix or an easy fix?
Well, let me just back up a little bit there and put it in context, because I think it's very difficult for, again, for folks that aren't in this space every day, like you and I are, to understand the difference between a data breach and a data exposure. And the best way I can put it for someone is it's the difference between losing your wallet and having your wallet stolen. So you lose your wallet, you leave it on a bus bench, you leave it sitting on a table in a restaurant. You have now created an opportunity. That information, all your cash, your credit cards, your driver's license, all that has now been exposed, but you don't necessarily know who saw it, who had access to it. Could have been a great person on the staff that said, oh, I have to protect this. You just don't know. Versus someone actively, and because I'm a woman and carry a purse, I'll use this analogy, someone actively running by you on the sidewalk and snatching your purse and grabbing it. You know they have nefarious motives. They're going to use whatever is of value in your handbag that they can get their hands on. And so that's the difference between a breach, that's the purse snatcher, versus an exposure, that's, oops, I left my wallet sitting on a counter somewhere. So that I want to put in context. And as far as the problem that it creates, just think about that happening en masse every day, all over the place. And that's the problem that we're setting ourselves up for, is not just this one-off here and there, one person leaving it. It's, you know, just imagine, especially if you live in a big city, thousands of people every day just leaving their wallets sitting on the counter. You're going to get to the point, one, odds are someone with nefarious intent is going to see it. And two, the good people are going to start ignoring it. They're just going to go, it's too much. I can't keep saving you from yourself. So yes, businesses have an absolutely critical mandate to start setting up their databases and putting in these best practices to protect this data so that we're not just leaving it exposed out there. And sometimes it's as simple as checking a box or not checking a box when the database is set up. So it's absolutely critical that businesses pay attention to that. And I know I'm going on and on, but I'm going to say one more thing about this. I also think it's very important for businesses to step back and understand that all of the data that they are capturing about their customers, about their internal clients, their employees, that all needs to be safeguarded. I talk with folks in the business community all the time, other nonprofit organizations, small business owners, and there's always a percentage of folks who go, well, I don't have any data that I have to protect. I don't collect any of that stuff. And I have to ask the question, do you have customers? Sure, I have customers. Do they pay you? You know, of course they pay me. Okay, you are collecting important data. How are you managing that? And so we still do not have the message out there that, you know, yes, there's sensitive identity credentials and there's non-sensitive data and records, but please, we have got to up the ante and start really as a cultural, as a societal, as a business, you know, group, we need to start protecting this data, not just from thieves, but frankly, from ourselves, from our own sloppiness and not setting these things up appropriately and paying attention to how valuable they are.
Well, those are all great points, especially the fact that it really doesn't matter the size of the business anymore, does it? Because everybody has data, and the bad guys have figured out a way to make every piece of data valuable. They can monetize just about everything at this point. So it is really good advice to remind people that you may think you're free and clear, and you may think that nobody wants your stuff, but the reality is somebody does. It's just a matter of, are they going to find it? Last question is, if a business has a data breach, what is it they should do? Because a data breach, as we talked about, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to result in an identity crime, but you can't assume that. So there are certain things people need to do to help their customers or whomever that they're holding data on. What is it they should be doing today? What's the best practice?
So I'm actually going to not answer that particular question because it's not about what do I do when I find out that I have a breach. I'm sorry, but if you don't have a plan in place, you're already well behind the curve. So I don't want to give businesses a couple of bullet points and say, if you have a breach, here's what you need to do, because that's sending the wrong message to the business community. What I want your listeners to get out of this is, if you have not thought about this and you do not have a plan for how you will react to this, that is what you need to be doing right now. Please don't put this off as one of those things that, oh, if this comes over the transom, I'll go ahead and handle it. No. You must be prepared. So they should already be looking. I mean, I think the first thing they can do is, my goodness, do an audit of what you collect. Do you even know what you're collecting? And depending on the size and scale of your business, you may not even have a good handle on that. That's a great place to start. What am I collecting? Then you can ask yourself, why am I collecting this and how am I storing it? Do you actually need it? Do I need to be collecting and storing this data? Is there a business use case for that? Interestingly, this is a little bit of a tangent, but the notion that I'm just going to hoover up everything and collecting it because I may be able to monetize it later, I understand that from the business case. It's not a best practice, but don't think for a second that the thieves aren't of the same mindset. These are criminal enterprises. They understand business 101. They're doing the same thing. They may not know how they're going to monetize the data that they've captured, but they'll go ahead and hang on to it until the day comes that it becomes useful. And then the last thing, now to get back to the kind of the things that folks should do. Another great place to start is looking at who has access to that data. There should be a hierarchy, an infrastructure of, hey, this is sensitive, this is critical data, so only certain people have a need to have access to this and a level of access. And then you can kind of go down the scale. I just did an interview with a media outlet in a small part of a Midwestern state, I won't say them by name, who was talking about how the school district had afforded data to all school district employees, pretty granular information, identity credentials, student records, their grades, disciplinary actions. And it didn't go outside of school district employees, but they never bothered to look at who needs it. So you had bus drivers that had access to all this information if they wanted it. That is not a best practice. There's no reason the bus driver needs to know, you know, be able to get into the school's system and see the kids' social security numbers and addresses and grades and all of those things. So keep that in mind. Not every employee needs access to every piece of your data, and you should have processes in place that allow you to segregate that.
Well, as much as we would all like for this to be the last time we talk about data breaches and identity crimes, I know we're going to be exploring this issue again next year when there's a new report, and probably several times in between. So, Eva, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. So glad to be here.
And thank you for listening to the BBB National Programs Better Series. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Better Series by visiting our website, bbbprograms.org, then click on that podcast tab. You'll find all of our episodes there, where you can listen on your Apple Podcast app or your favorite streaming platform.
You just enjoyed the Better Series podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcast@bbbnp.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.